It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio on this Valentine's Day. Happy Valentine's Day to all of our devoted viewers and listeners. We love you all. That's why we're here doing this. I'd like to say to my wife, honey, happy Valentine's Day. I love you, and I look forward to seeing you when we're done with the show, or when you get back from your date, whichever comes last, sure. On today's show, our top brass weigh in on 2018. Sexual misconduct in the White House, who could have seen that one coming? A budget deal, and for most of our show, continuation of our discussion of gerrymandering with our special guest. But first, Donald Trump might get his military parade. How is this possible? And more importantly than that, what about all those people who had bone spurs? Why do they get slided? Can they travel by car in the military parade? Leading to the eternal question, why is it that the biggest cowards and irresponsible people in the country are always the biggest military boosters? President avoiding service? Anyway, for some of us on the left, at least, we could be pretty happy that the President of the United States and the Republican Party is actually, take a deep breath here, emulating France. C'est très gratifiant de voir un président des États-Unis républicain chercher à imiter la France. En général, les républicains se moquent des démocrates parce qu'ils reconnaissent l'existence de ce pays. Really? That joke kills the knees.
Oh my God.
Dommage que ce président soit aussi un abruti et un fou dangereux. Sorry, I've been practicing my Clouseau, Inspector Clouseau imitation all week. We've come a long way from renaming French fries in the House cafeteria Freedom Fries. Anyway, speaking of the military, our military chiefs just weighed in on the 2018 election. And they are unanimous in picking the winner of that election as Vladimir Putin. That's right, our top brass picks Vladimir Putin to win the midterm elections in America in 2018. Talking about how we are still under siege from Russia. However, when asked what they plan to do about that, what the Trump administration has enacted in order to address this problem of Russia's interference in our election, I don't know, they all looked like a Trump administration official at a Planned Parenthood convention. I don't know, what do you want from me? I don't know. We got nothing. Nothing there. That's what we've done about it. Wait, they said. We've imposed very tough Russia sanctions. Oh, no, wait. That was Congress. The administration actually didn't enforce those sanctions that were voted almost unanimously by Congress. Well, whatever. We've identified the problem. Speaking of the problem, and Valentine's Day. Rob Porter. Yes, happy Valentine's Day to Rob Porter and all the women in his life. No, that's too soon. Too soon. That was. Before we get to the women aspect, I don't even admit this is a big deal. This is a really big deal. This guy, a staff secretary, was exposed to the most top secret information around the White House. Remember that time when we were attacking Hillary Clinton? Because of the whole email thing, she used a server that might not have been sufficiently secure. Well, now that Republicans are basically
CCing Vladimir Putin on their high-profile, top-secret emails. We don't seem to care about it. Doesn't matter anymore. Security clearance, top secret, whatever. We've moved on from that. It helped us win the election. We've moved on. We'll just not enforce sanctions. This is someone who was exposed to our darkest secrets. He could not get his security clearance. In large part because he was so likely to be subject to blackmail. Way to go, Trump administration. But maybe, since that's probably too hard for most Americans to grasp, the hopeful aspect of this story is once again the highlight of the fact that this is an administration of sexual abusers. This is war on women, continued war on women in America, who don't like the fact that women's rights are actually being expanded in this country. At the same time, we've got the Me Too movement. We've got the retrenchment movement. The This Sucks and Women Need to Know Their Place movement. Women, we're counting on you. You are our best hope. Men have screwed this up. Me Too movement, everybody. Join it, support it, get them out to vote. Because this is what fixes things in 2018. The other thing, of course, that's fun about this story is, once again, how the Trump administration's story changes like the weather. We didn't know. Well, we did know. Well, we knew a little bit. Well, we were angry about it. Well, we weren't angry about it. Whatever. Guys, could you take a time out and meet and get your story straight before you spread the bullshit? The FBI, that damn pesky FBI again, came out. Trump's appointee, Christopher Wray, had to come out and say, they're all full of shit. We told them about this a year ago. Republicans are worried that Trump's misogyny, as if it stops there, will stop their momentum heading into the 2018 elections, leading us to ask, as we often do, momentum. How could they have momentum? What could possibly lead to Republicans having momentum? Well, the answer to that question lies in the fact that approval of the tax bill is going up. It's reached 40%. It's in the 40s, I think, right now. And Republicans are saying privately that they are hoping to get it to 60% by the time of the 2018 elections. Why? Because Americans are going to become more informed about the tax bill? No, because they will have months to lie to people on Fox News, on every other media source that they own or that they influence. And that includes, well, pretty much everyone. Yeah. And they figure that they are going to lie, lie, lie to an ignorant American public. And they're going to be able to win because, as usual, the voters will have no idea what the hell they're voting for. Finally, before we introduce our special guest, short show other than the guest today because we want to spend a lot of time with our special guest. Bit of a shout out for Nancy Pelosi. We will talk next week when we have more time about Trump's budget proposal and the budget deal in Congress that kept our government running. But Nancy Pelosi, favorite whipping girl of the right, in part because of the girl part, stood up in front of Congress for 8 hours to fight on behalf of whom? People. On behalf of the Democrats, fighting for child care, opioid abuse, community health centers, CHIP, children's health insurance, disaster relief, mental health, medical research, and veterans health clinics. As opposed to the Republicans, fighting to serve the American people on a silver platter to their wealthy donors. We'll come back to that next week. Anyway, we've been talking a lot about gerrymandering and other ways that Republicans have been trying to subvert whatever pseudo-democracy we have in this country right now. That's why we're very excited today to be able to introduce our special guest, Dr. Andrew Beveridge, the co-founder and president of the social research organization, Social Explorer, the chairman of the sociology department at Queens College. Dr. Beveridge helped write an amicus brief using his research to demonstrate how to measure gerrymandering, to give the courts a way to determine when gerrymandering crosses a line and is actionable in our courts. His brief, his research, helped lead the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to rule against the Pennsylvania plan, districting plan, and to require it to be written and rewritten to actually help the Pennsylvania voter get representation. Welcome back to the show. We're here now with our special guest, Dr. Andrew Beveridge, co-founder and president of Social Explorer, chair of the sociology department at Queens College, professor at the CUNY Graduate Center. And we're going to talk about gerrymandering.
Yeah, thanks
for coming.
Thanks, David. I'm very happy to be here.
So we've been talking on this show about gerrymandering. You were involved in the Pennsylvania decision, and I also understand the Supreme Court Gil v. Whitford case.
Yeah, I was involved with an amicus brief. It was styled as political science professors, and it basically made the argument that the technology has moved so rapidly that it both makes it much easier to gerrymander and make gerrymanders very, what are called durable. In other words, they work fine whether or not there's a wave election. They still would protect whoever wrote them. But the fact that the technology now exists means you can also develop ways to measure how gerrymandered a district is. So one of the issues in Gil versus Whitford, and quite honestly one of the fundamental issues, is how do you measure partisan gerrymandering? How can you tell whether or not a district is partisan? And there's sort of, generally with gerrymandering, people look at the picture, they look at the picture, they look at how the district looks, that's sort of the traditional way that people argue about gerrymandering. But in reality, the fundamental thing is how much partisan advantage or disadvantage does a particular set of lines give you in a state? And there's now a number of ways to measure that. The kind of term of art is asymmetric. How much asymmetry is there? Like, no matter what, how favored are the Democrats or how favored are the Republicans overall in this district, in this set of districts, say in Wisconsin or in the case of Pennsylvania, And there's ways now, there's actually a series of ways to measure that now.
Is it North Carolina where they call the district? There's one district called, is it North Carolina or Pennsylvania?
It's Pennsylvania.
Goofy kicking Donald Duck or something?
Yeah, that's around Pennsylvania, Philadelphia area. And that district, was done very carefully to make sure that certain areas which voted Republican were in one district and certain areas that voted Democrat were piled into another district. And that's really what you do. You try to concentrate your opposition, in this case the Democrats of Pennsylvania, and you try to make sure that there are some districts that you'll win. So let's say the typical Democratic district has a 70% advantage. The typical Republican district might have a 54-55% advantage. That is definitely a gerrymander. That's what you do, is you effectively pack the Democrats into one district and then crack the rest of them into districts so they don't have enough power to win. And there's a series of cases. There is a North Carolina case going up. There's a case in Maryland that the Supreme Court took. The Pennsylvania case was probably safe because it's a state case. The Supreme Court refused to get involved, which makes a lot of sense that they wouldn't get involved. But the very important thing about that case is that it's kind of like a model of the argument and the methods and the proof that you would need to show that there is a partisan gerrymander and that you can measure such a gerrymander. So I think the Pennsylvania case, even though it's a state case, may turn out to be very, very important as this goes on. Because the Supreme Court is obviously looking hard now at gerrymandering, and they're going to have to read, you know, they'll read the Pennsylvania case, you know, the Pennsylvania state constitution, state law, are really not so different from the U.S. law, and it does affect congressional redistricting, which are national elections. And so it may very well be that that case will turn out to be the model case, even though it's not effectively a landmark, since it doesn't have any power outside of Pennsylvania.
Well, what's happening, of course, is the Supreme Court has previously been reluctant to take a gerrymandering case. They've taken it when it's racial gerrymandering. When,
right.
When you're drawing lines to exclude a racial minority, hard to imagine that could happen. But if you're doing that, then the Supreme Court has said that you can't do that. But they've been unwilling to step in political gerrymandering. The stated reason was the idea of I know it when I see it is not good enough. It may have worked for pornography, but it doesn't work. Famous Supreme Court decision, I know pornography when I see it. But they didn't want to do that with gerrymandering. They wanted something that says, that calls attention to the fact this is gerrymandering.
Right.
That's what you're doing.
And that you can measure it. See, the point is, like, with racial gerrymandering, and I've done several cases, voting rights cases, where the issue is either the discrimination effectively against African Americans, or in one case, the Portchester case, against Hispanics. And in those cases, there's certain measures you use. Like, you see if there's really three, there's so-called three prongs to Gingles. Number one is, can you draw a district that is that a minority could win? You know, that a minority could win. And then the other two prongs are, does the minority coalesce? Do they vote for a candidate of choice, or do they spread their allegiance all over the map? And then the third thing is, do the majority, generally speaking the whites, do they vote in a racially polarized way to block the potential of the minority group, either the blacks or Latinos, to win an election? And so there's a series of methodologies that are used that have been adopted by the courts to answer those questions, along with what's called the totality of circumstances, where they look at whether or not, you know, there were certain kinds of things done during the election to discriminate. This is in what are called Section 2 cases, where you start out with an allegation. It's not some of the cases. There used to be a way that every district in certain states had to be pre-cleared. That's no longer true because of a Supreme Court ruling about 2 years ago. Shelby County. But they want, you know, what they need is a measure or sets of measures that can do the same thing for partisan gerrymandering. And there's one called the efficiency gap, which basically looks to see how many votes are thrown away, how many Democratic votes are thrown away, how many Republican votes are thrown away. There's been, in the Wisconsin case, the dissent in the appellate court really attacked the efficiency gap measure, and in fact, the majority in that case walked a bit away from the efficiency gap measure. But there's been a new set of approaches to measuring gerrymandering, and the one that I found very interesting is using a statistical procedure. You effectively randomly drawn plans. So say you'll run 100,000 plans in Wisconsin, or 100,000 plans in Pennsylvania, and there's a bit of this in the Pennsylvania case, actually. You would say, what is the average partisan skew? Because, you know, just because Democrats may live one place and Republicans may live another, there may be some partisan skew. And then you compare the mean and median partisan skew with the adopted plan. And, you know, and so you get things like the partisan skew is 3%, but the adopted plan is 8%. And so that would be, you know, pretty good evidence of gerrymandering. Now the court
could bring in standard deviations. Now,
well, you don't have to, because there's 100,000.
That's
like 100,000 plans. I mean, so you basically, you know, you don't have to worry about the.
You
statistics.
Get a measure that's a real.
Yeah, yeah, it would be very precise, and the measure also of the plan itself is very precise. It uses the election data. uses, like, so you're running on, say, dozen elections or something. And the interesting thing about this approach, having done my own gerrymandering a couple of times on contract, the approach is very similar to what you do when you draw plans or you want to gerrymander. And I drew the plan for Westchester County Board of Elections.
Takes a hacker to catch a hacker.
Well, that's our argument in Whitford v. Gill and in the Pennsylvania kid. Because basically the idea is that you set up, we set this thing up, we used, I think, 8 or 10 elections, and it was called the Democratic Performance Index. And we had this for every single election district in Westchester County. So if you want to draw a district that has a high demographic, you know, you could draw a district and you could have a pretty good idea of how it will, quote unquote, perform for Democrats. And it's a computerized method. And so one of the interesting things, and I think one of the major things in Whitford v. Gill, and it's kind of the thing that election law nerds know all about, because they follow, there's a couple of election law blogs, particularly one called, well, it's called the Election Law Blog. It's done by a law professor at University of Southern California. But the thing you find with that is that in the Whitford v. Gill, there's a abacus by Bernie Groffman, who's basically the, you know, dean of deans of redistricting guys. You know, he's a professor, actually also at USC. I think he's still at USC. And by Gaddy. And Gaddy is at the University of Oklahoma. He's a political science professor at the University of Oklahoma. And the interesting thing about Gaddy and why their amicus is unique is that Gaddy drew the Wisconsin plan. He analyzed the Wisconsin plan for gerrymandering, and so he basically said in his amicus, I know it's gerrymandered because I did it. And I know it can be measured because I measured it. And so so it puts the Supreme Court in a really interesting position, because they've got that amicus there. And then it was in the New York Times magazine on Whitford, they called Gaddy up, and his answer to the reporter's question was, I don't do that kind of work anymore.
Well, you know, the part of the good news is by getting that much more sophisticated in doing it, this is what's prompting the courts to act.
Exactly.
And they've gotten to the point where apparently, and this is your work, some of your work, where you guys got so good at this that it's crisis time.
Yeah, and in fact, the real indication of that is I was told by when I was doing something with Washington Post, I helped Washington Post do an article, and I was told by him, and this might be a subject for another show, but I was told by the guy that there's this case called Evanwell where they were trying to change actually the denominator for redistricting and switch it to citizens of voting age, which would have huge effects. I mean, you could imagine. And so he told me, and they want to put citizenship on the census.
Correct. That's something they have more of a chance to do.
Trump administration. Well, so he told me that he had talked to Republican redistrictors who told him that they've gone about as far as they can go with the current methods. In other words, they've gerrymandered as much as they can, and so to preserve this, they need Evanwell. And interestingly enough, there's a Washington Post op-ed today that talks about Trump's efforts to keep America white. And they point at putting citizenship on all of the things that they're doing with immigration, also like felony disenfranchisement, which they have in Florida and a lot of other states. All of those things help the Republicans. There's just no two ways about it.
This is why I get out and vote this year. The felony disenfranchisement is up on the ballot in Florida this year. And it is a dramatic change of events if that gets.
Oh yes, 1.5 million. 1.5 million people are not allowed to vote in Florida because they've been felons.
I think it's a few years ago, it was something like one out of three black men in Florida are forever forbidden from voting because of their...
Right, and actually, felony disenfranchisement spread in the United States. It didn't used to exist, really. So, so all of these things are political. They're often framed as non-political. Same with voter ID, all those sorts of things. And so, I'm moderately hopeful because... Particularly on the partisan gerrymandering, because the court doesn't necessarily go straight down the road. I mean, they don't have to worry about being elected, the Supreme Court. So,
but they may in Pennsylvania right now. They may have to worry about being impeached.
I don't think it's gonna
right. That's what they're talking.
Oh yeah, sure.
They so you had said basically you look at all this. 3%. Yeah, that was the hypothetical you gave that these numbers would vary by 3%. What tells the court, where do you draw the line? Is it more than that? Is it more than 5? Is it more than 6?
Yeah.
I assume there's going to be a concern. Where are we supposed to draw the line?
Well, they do that right now for what's called population equality, for because districts have to have the same population, but it's plus or minus 5. So except for Congress, which has to be exact, the other districts... like state senate, state assembly, and any other legislative districts have to be within plus or minus 5%. And so it's not impossible to come up with measures. It's really not. You have to have at least 50-something percent of with the racial gerrymandering, you have to have like 50-some percent, to like above 50%, and you have to show that district will perform, that it will, in fact, be carried by a candidate of choice of that party. So it's not, I mean, that they are used to these kinds of measures. There's methods, they measure for racial gerrymandering, it's all worked out. So one possible outcome of Whitford v. Gill is they might kick it back and let the courts work out the measures. You know, saying there are measures, you know, kick it back, go do it. You know, that I wouldn't be surprised by that at all. And so I think that, but that's a really important question, like how egregious does it have to be before you have court intervention?
And if it's opening up a whole can of worms, if each court determines how egregious it is, don't we have Bush v. Gore problems of equal protection where you are not protecting voters equally across America? I know we're not supposed to cite that decision. The Supreme Court told us that. And this is why the Supreme Court told us that.
Well, in state cases, they have to be appealed directly. Because if you do a statewide redistricting challenge, it's appealed almost. It's a special court which is sits as an appellate court. It includes at least one appellate judge, and they are sent to the Supreme Court. And unlike typical Supreme Court, petitions of certiorari, which can or cannot be granted by the Supreme Court, every single case has to be either affirmed, either affirmed or reversed. So the court actually has to act on any of these cases, assuming they're appealed. And I think it's a fair assumption that someone will appeal every single one of these cases. So I think more likely what would happen is that the next round of redistricting will be completely different. There'll be massive amounts of work for people like me who do redistricting consulting, and massive work for redistricting legal lawyers, but there'll also be a complete upheaval of the political process.
You're smiling. This is a high note at this point. When this show goes, when the recording of this show goes up tomorrow, that's the day that the independent electoral, whatever they call them in Pennsylvania, is supposed to be coming up with this plan, right? It's supposed to be submitting the plan by the 15th.
Well, I'm very comfortable with that because Nathan personally drew the congressional lines in New York. And actually, I was involved with that case.
Stanford?
Well, he was in Columbia at the time.
Yeah.
And he's a very good guy. He drew the congressional districts in New York. And I was involved with what's called the Unity Coalition, which included the blacks, the Latinos, and the Asians. And I was their, I sort of was their expert, and I testified. We had a few minor changes that we proposed, which were accepted, one of which had to do with whether Hakeem Jeffries would be in his own district, if his house would be in his district, which they had, personally had accidentally drawn him out. But I think if that's, if that's what you end up with, equal, nice competitive districts, that's a real gain for the Democrats. No two ways about it. They might pick up 3 or 4 seats in Pennsylvania.
This is the Democrats gerrymandered too, but at this point, one, the Republicans seem to do it more fervently, and two, they control most of the state houses.
Well, I also, Maryland case, which the Supreme Court took, is a Democrat gerrymander.
Right.
Yeah.
So it sounds very scientific. Or another word for that, gobbledygook?
Well, that's Judge Roberts. He said it was gobbledygook, but the former Solicitor General Freed wrote a really pointed letter to the New York Times saying that his 15-year-old daughter could understand this, so I couldn't. John Roberts. So it's not gobbledygook. It's numbers. It's really numbers. It's really not gobbledygook. And the court has for years upheld, looked at voting rights being trampled for minority groups. And I think now's the time for the court to move into the whole issue of partisan gerrymandering.
And you are cautiously optimistic?
I'm cautiously optimistic, partially because Judge Kennedy said it was justiciable that he didn't have a measure. It was 4-4, four court in that case about 20 years ago. Four of the courts said, you can't do this. Four of the courts said, you should do it, and it's a gerrymander. And Judge Kennedy said, you could do it, but there's no good measure. And so now there are a plethora, really, of measures, and they all kind of point the same way.
And when we talk about the Supreme Court, at this point, we're pretty much talking about Anthony Kennedy.
Right, exactly. And several other cases, he's been a swing vote on so many cases lately. I wish Sandra Day were still there, but,
Oh, boy, have times changed, huh?
I know.
Saying that 30 years ago. all right, I guess I'm being told this should sort of be it. I guess with John Roberts, it's not a question of whether he can understand it. The question, of course, is whether they are willing to understand what's out there and they're willing to do this. How political are they going to be?
Right,
and
absolutely.
You're giving them plenty of reason to basically be told you can't be that political. You got to do this.
Well, I think it's really become a huge issue, the redistricting. I mean, it's on John Oliver. It's on, on Steve
Forward
Colbert.
Forward Nation Radio.
Forward Nation
Most
Radio.
Most prominently, it's on Forward Nation Radio.
No. I think it's become a real issue this year, and I've never seen it at that level in my before. Even before the Gill versus Whitford oral argument, which was pretty good actually for the people who are hoping for change.
Well, we have you in large part to thank for that.
No, not really.
Yes, we
I'm on one of the seven. There are only 1,000 pages of amici. In Whitford v. Gill.
We will explain amici. We probably did it before we came
Friend
in.
Friend of the court.
In important cases, normally litigants in a case are the only ones who can submit papers, but in important cases, especially Supreme Court cases, where the decisions will affect a lot of people, they allow friend of the court briefs, and that's what you're talking about with the amicus briefs.
Yeah, and there are tremendous numbers, particularly Whitford v. Gill.
Well, Dr. Andrew Beveridge, thank you very much for joining us. I hope you'll come back and we'll gloat about the good news when the Supreme Court announces the Gill decision.
Yeah, no, that I would be happy to come back.
Again?
I enjoyed it. Thanks
thank
a lot,
you.
David.
It was great having you. Bye-bye. We'll be back tomorrow. Welcome back to our Forward Nation Radio viewers. Thanks again to Dr. Andrew Beveridge for joining us today. Thank you for joining us. Hopefully you're learning a little bit more about how the gerrymandering thing is working and you're crossing your fingers and maybe making some phone calls, whatever, about gerrymandering in your state and ultimately the Supreme Court decision. Gerrymandering is one of many threats to U.S. pseudo-democracy that we've been talking about on this show. We will continue to discuss a couple that were briefly raised in our discussion here today. Voter suppression, and we will talk some more, hopefully next time, about the 2020 census and Republican plans to once again disenfranchise Democratic voters. Until then, wishing you again a very happy Valentine's Day to you and yours. Thank you for joining us as always. If you go on Facebook, Twitter, and all those other Russian sites of social media, which we love so much, because we have to. Please like us, shout us, give us a shout out, whatever you can to help us spread the word on Forward Nation Radio. Listen to us on Podbean at podbean.com. And if you love what you heard, like what you heard, like us on, you know, Facebook. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't yet done so. Please forward our link to your friends. Tell your friends. Spread the word. Forward Nation Radio. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.